the University of Georgia, former chairman of the FASB. Okay, now Nancy, if you want to come stand here, you do. As soon as Nancy puts down her two more chimneys, we'll... Okay, Nancy Keisha from Duke University. Thank you.
First, we determine the recognized general law. Then, we determine the character. And the care of our character, because if you don't have the tax rate, it's not a community of law.
This is my podium here to improvise. First of all, in terms of the spectrum, Amy was described as the far end. I'm kind of on the other end, as you'll see in just a minute. I really appreciate Bob's inviting me here. I wanted to attend anyway, and it gave me the chance to get in for free. So Bob and Amy and Nancy and others in this afternoon will really get into a lot of interesting details that I'm sure you'll find very useful. I hope that some of my things might be a little bit useful too, but primarily I think he's using me to show that even a very technical beginner can use a little technology in teaching, and if that's the case, that all of you can really do good things. Before getting into what I might call my official comments, I wanted to just spend a couple of minutes thanking Bob for all he has done for me and for for all accounting professors. He just sort of alluded to a few of these things with respect to his website and the AECM and so forth. But on Thursday morning, I'm sure that most of you will be here still, Bob will receive an honor as one of the two outstanding accounting educators of the year. And of all the things that I've achieved in my career, one of the proudest things was being able to serve on the committee that selected Bob for this award this particular year. His technical skills are obviously terrific, but they're exceeded by his unselfishness in sharing information with virtually anybody who simply asks him a question. I think that's just really terrific. I think this is really what an outstanding educator is all about, and there just isn't a more deserving person than Bob. I read his bookmarks regularly. If you aren't on the distribution list for that, you're missing something. I have to say, though, how many, by the way, do read the bookmarks regularly? Yes, I'm surprised. I would have thought that almost all of you would, but get on the list. It's really interesting.
Information overload.
I have to admit that the last few pages, which usually includes a little humor and so forth, is usually a little bit more understandable to me than some of the more sophisticated technical things. And really, just to sort of summarize, to show how much I admire Bob, a couple of years ago I decided to ask my barber to emulate Bob's fashionable Well, let me stress first of all that I am not a computer geek. That's not necessarily bad, because I looked up the definition of geek in the dictionary, and it says, a performer of grotesque or depraved acts in a carnival, such as biting off the head of a live chicken. So I'm definitely not one of those kind of people. But before joining the University of Georgia faculty 5 years ago now, I could barely turn on a personal computer. I had one in my office. Actually, when I was in public accounting, I was sort of ahead of the curve for a while. I was one of the first people to get involved in statistical sampling and computer auditing and so forth, but I then sort of segued into more of the technical accounting function and had secretaries and other people helping me with routine types of things. When I moved to the university, I was told that I wouldn't have that kind of support. I knew that was the case, but it had to really be a crash course in learning how to use the computer. Even now, my primary uses are just sort of the word processing and internet surfing and email and things of that nature. Notwithstanding the fact that I had almost no technical background, in 1998 I was asked to participate in a program the University of Georgia Terry College of Business had just entered into a contract with PricewaterhouseCoopers to provide an MBA program through mainly distance learning to a group, about 40 or so a year, of bright people on the consulting staff of PricewaterhouseCoopers. Most of these people, not all of them, but most of them were ones working in information technology. They might have probably computer science as their background or engineering, and they were trying to broaden them out to be broader business type people. I think one of the reasons I was chosen, first of all, because I was new and probably less resistant to change than some of the other people, but frankly, almost no one else in our department at that time had any technology background either. As you may recall in reading in the newspaper, of course, just a week or so ago, it was announced that IBM is going to acquire PricewaterhouseCoopers consulting practices, but before that, they were going to spin it off into a separate company, an initial public offering, and they were going to change the name to Monday. I really didn't understand that very well. I'm talking to a lot of people. They were pretty uncomfortable with it, but it was particularly troubling to me because our new class starts next week. And so on Tuesday, I was going to teach Monday. That was just going to be driving me crazy. Literally, that's my first class next Tuesday for the coming semester. Fortunately, they didn't change that that name after all. Anyway, they wanted to have a program that would allow these people to primarily keep doing their job. These were very successful people, typically a minimum of about 3 or 4 years experience in consulting, ones that were very valuable, charging lots of time to their clients and so forth, involved in major projects, and they wanted to be able to continue and enhance their growth, but to keep them working and providing revenues for the firm. Because so many of them were computer technologists in their consulting, and of course the big growth in consulting for major accounting firms over the last several years has been in information technology, installing big systems. In fact, when I first met a lot of these people, I said, "What do you do?" And they would typically describe themselves as specialists in a certain function, certain program. They were an SAP person or a PeopleSoft person or something like that. Seemed awfully specialized, but that's what why they were going back to school, to become a little bit more of a generalist. We were, frankly, scared to death about this because here we were bringing in a bunch of specialists in information technology. We knew we had something to impart to them in terms of general business background, but we were going to be using these tools that we knew nothing about, and they were already very expert, but it's actually worked out quite well. It has been a give and take kind of a process, and particularly over the first couple of years or so, we got a lot of really good feedback from the students and found ways that we could use the technology better and just some things that we were trying to do in the delivery that didn't make an awful lot of sense. PricewaterhouseCoopers set as one of the conditions of this arrangement with us that we use Lotus Notes, and particularly there's a function called Learning Space in Lotus Notes, and they had that as Lotus Notes was their means of communicating within the firm, and so they didn't want to go to some new technology. They said we want our people to be familiar with this already, so we had to learn Lotus Notes and particularly Learning Space. So we started from scratch, I think maybe about May or so of 1998. Our first class, including one that I was going to be teaching, was in August. So we had about 3 months to figure out how the technology worked and then develop our class materials and so forth. Probably the big advantage of Lotus Notes, in addition to familiarity of the PricewaterhouseCoopers people, is that it allows them to replicate the class materials so that they can work offline, so they can have all the stuff in their computer, be flying from New York to Los Angeles for a client assignment, and work away on their computer and take tests or wherever, and then replicate when they get to Los Angeles, and they don't have to be hooked up to an internet connection the whole time. Notwithstanding that advantage, this last year, in fact, just a couple of months ago, UGA finally insisted that we start using Blackboard. Blackboard is something that we're using more broadly in our Terry College of Business now, and it was just too difficult to support two different systems, and frankly, we just didn't think that Lotus Notes Learning Space had the same advantages that Blackboard, so they were agreeable to switch over. The way the class works, they come to campus for 2 weeks initially. They'll be here starting Sunday night this week, as a matter of fact, and they will be on campus for 2 full weeks, and then after that, they come back about 3 times a year for the better part of a week. I think they come in on Tuesday evening and stay through Sunday morning. So what happens, for example, with the class that's coming in that's beginning this Sunday, they'll be taking 2 classes. They'll be taking my class and one on business law, I think it is. And we'll give them a fair amount of class, actually, in the first 2 weeks that they're there, and then all the rest of it will be distance learning. To back up a little bit, when we first started this program, we decided that we would give them 4 classes at a time over about a 4 month, or well, actually 4 to 6 month period. And that just was an absolute nightmare. It just didn't work for the students. We were just overloading them with way too much activity, too many different topics on top of their workload. I should mention that they're expected to spend about 15 hours a week on the classwork for the 2 classes that they're taking now, in addition to 40 hours that they're working for their clients. Now, that's the theory. That's what the firm supposedly allows them to do. We know that these, again, are very hardworking, challenged people, and that probably the more likely scenarios are working 55 hours on their clients and another 10 to 15 hours on our stuff. When we gave them 4 classes at one time, they were just about ready to commit mass suicide, frankly. And I remember we were not given a whole lot of direction and how we structure our classes, and I tried to make my PwC class look as close as I could to the on-campus MBA class that I teach. And so I thought it would make sense, since I was giving them about 1/3 of the course materials during the first 2 weeks that they were there, that I would give them an interim exam, which is what I do for my regular on-campus class. So on the last day of the 2 weeks for the first class that came in, I gave them a 2.5-hour exam. Well, it actually worked out very well. They did well on my exam and for the rest of the class. Unfortunately, it killed the other 3 classes that they were working on, because they spent all their time preparing for my exam the last several days before the exam and didn't keep up with the other classes nearly as much as they should. So everybody hated me, both the students and the other faculty members. After that, I decided that we could make other arrangements. We have the exams taken online after they leave campus. The overall reactions, the results of this program have been very positive. We've now had 2 classes of graduates, and the 5th group is beginning next week. This is a year-to-year proposition, as was indicated. PricewaterhouseCoopers Consulting is being acquired by IBM. Even before that, with the initial public offering, it wasn't clear whether they're going to be able to continue this. It's a fairly costly process. I frankly don't know the exact numbers, but they pay a fairly steep amount to the university for doing this. And with the consulting businesses not doing quite so well the last few years, we're just not sure how much longer this is going to last. To go into just a little bit more detail, as I said, I have the students for roughly about 20 hours now over the next 2 weeks during this initial campus visit. And I cover roughly about 40% of the total material that's going to be covered in the class during this period. We have gone to a system the last 2 years now where we actually have what we call in-class study hours. This amounts to four of the 20 hours. The reason for this was because we were expecting the students, I was expecting the students, to work on the, to come to class and work on the classes during the day and then study at night, read, prepare for the next class. But I just want to ask Cooper, once there are people to do a lot more networking, to get to know each other, to start working in teams and so forth, and plus just the burnout factor, they thought this was a lot to ask of the people, so they've asked us to try to cut down the nighttime study and so forth, and allow a little bit more time during the day for them to do some of the reading, just to ask me more questions, just to kind of have just a bit more relaxed pace. After the initial visit, the first 2 weeks, I don't see them at all, except for 1 hour at the very end when they come back to begin their next two classes. During this time, they're expected to keep up to date. They're spending approximately 7.5 hours a week on my class, plus 7.5 hours in another class. And what they do is a number of things. This again is not terribly sophisticated. This is toward the lower end of the spectrum that Bob described before. I record lectures over PowerPoint slides, and so they listen to the lectures. They can go through them as many times as they want to, the same as if I were lecturing live. The lectures are probably a little bit better organized, because I try pretty hard to make them tight, you know, not as long as perhaps the ones that would be on campus where you might just sort of wander a little bit or just say something that pops into your mind. Try to concentrate on obviously the key things. And in teaching an introductory financial accounting class, I'm obviously trying to concentrate on real world types of things and keep it at a relatively high level as opposed to some of the detail that you might cover, particularly like for an undergraduate class. In addition to that, of course, I do the reading. I also have them work cases and problems, but I have them do that in teams. I don't ask them to turn those things in for credit during the class, and I know that, frankly, that there's a fairly wide range. Some don't spend any time on that. Some do it very religiously. Some of the teams work very well. Some of the teams don't work very well at all. But I ask them basically to work those things in teams, talk among their team members, and they usually do have at least one conference call a week so that they can talk about how things are going in their classes. And then I post the solutions after the fact. But I tell them basically, don't bother me. I don't mean this in a negative way, but try to work these things out among your class members, because you're going to learn a lot more by doing that than simply saying, I don't understand how we did this. I certainly do respond when they have questions, but I try to get them to do it themselves first. I also give them a short quiz every week. I do this during the on-campus part and also while they're gone. And this helps keep them up to date, keep them motivated, and also gives them at least some feedback on how they're doing in the class. This is a relatively small part of the grade, but again, it keeps them gives them some feedback as opposed to waiting until the end. I give them a midterm exam and a final exam through the computer. It's a series, or it's a combination of objective questions that the computer can grade automatically, and then a lot of problems that they have to work that I have to go through and grade individually. This becomes kind of an interesting exercise. First of all, we apply the honor system. It would be easy for people to game the system and to simply talk to each other, and one person does it and then tells the next person what the answers are or what the questions are. They can prepare a little bit. But we decided that these are people that, first of all, they're supposed to say that they promise to be honest and so forth, but they're the types of people that we feel that they have nothing to gain by trying to game the system like that. And so we allow them to just do it themselves whenever they can, whenever their work schedule permits, within some parameters. You usually give them no more than 10 days, for example, to complete an exam. We also have class discussion, which involves posting articles, encouraging them to post articles, As particularly over the last couple of years, there have been so many interesting things happening in the accounting profession. We'll post something on a recent article on a recent topic that's been in the Wall Street Journal, and say how this ties into something that you just covered in chapter 9 of the book, whatever it might be, and try to encourage them to talk a little bit about it. I don't require class participation. Some of the other professors have done that. A relatively small part of the grade, maybe 10% or so, is class participation. It doesn't sound like it works very well for the most part. You have a lot of Me Too type postings that don't really add an awful lot. There are quite a few emails and phone calls from students who seek personal assistance. I haven't gotten to a point like Amy of having a virtual contact with the students all the time, but I do promise to get back to them usually no more than a day, and if they send during a working day and I happen to be in the office, I'll get back to them immediately. This has not become overwhelming. A lot of the professors are concerned about this can just eat you up. When we first started, and we had four different classes, one of the instructors was giving a class in statistical sampling. And I don't know exactly what he did wrong, but he was getting something like 300 emails a week, and very complicated ones. You know, I don't understand this particular statistical test that you're applying here, whatever it might be. And he was spending 60 hours a week on this class, and it was just killing him. And in talking through, the best I can tell him, he just didn't design the thing very well. He left too many things to subject to judgment or to question, and students were very frustrated, and it really created a problem for him. I have not had that problem. And again, part of it is, I think, pushing down the responsibility to do the work and talk to the team members and so forth, and that helps a fair amount. But keeping the instructions and the requirements as clear and as crisp as you possibly can, I think, helps a lot with that, with respect to that. Last semester, I tried a weekly office hour where all interested students could use, this was actually a Blackboard application, where they could actually come in and chat with me during a particular time period. And it was just an absolute failure. Hardly anybody used it. They were busy people. Their time that was convenient to them just wasn't necessarily the time that I was willing to do it. I think I did it from like 7 to 9 p.m. on Monday, for example. And it was really not a very good use of my time, although I was usually sitting there reading or watching the news on television or something at the same time for the infrequent message that would come in. I thought probably it was still important to do that, and I'll do it again this semester, simply to tell the students that you're interested and willing. One of the things that we found when we first started teaching distance is that the first couple of weeks when they're live, we have a really good spirit and working very closely with the people, and then they disappear, and from their perspective, we disappear. And it really is hard to kind of make them feel like they're still in good contact with you. I send out a lot of email messages and things like that just to kind of make them understand that the class is still going on, that I'm there to help, and things of that nature, just to feel that there's some interaction going. My personal observations about the classes that I've taught so far, a couple of points. Number one, the overall grades have worked out to almost exactly the same as my on-campus classes. I don't think through any particular trying to structure them differently. Yeah, these are very smart people. They're kind of like the ones that Bob mentioned, at Stanford and so forth. These are successful young people with PricewaterhouseCoopers, so they should do very well. The question that you finally come down to, I think, is this as effective a way of teaching an MBA program as having them on campus on a full-time basis for 2 years as we have for a lot of other people? And the answer is clearly no, in my opinion. But on the other hand, these are people who simply wouldn't have the opportunity to go do something like this if they had to take 2 years out of their life. I think it's very close to the same kind of experience that our on-campus people get. We teach them essentially the same materials. The only real difference is they don't have a lot of electives. They pretty much have to take the same program for the whole 2 years. And so, we offer lots and lots of different tracks in our second year in the MBA program, for example, and the PwC people can't do that. But I think in terms of the content of the education delivery, it works out very well. I've used the same techniques now in my on-campus classes for the last couple of years. Just a couple of observations about that. MBA students must have laptops now. And most of them bring them to class. All of my PowerPoint slides are posted there. So first of all, they can print them out if they want to in advance. Some of them do that. The first couple of years when I was teaching, everybody wanted to have copies of all my slides. So I was making thousands of pages of copies of slides. Now it's their choice. They can print them out. They can bring the computer to class. They can make notes as we're going through and so forth. A lot of people have raised questions about, isn't it a bad idea to have the students operating their own computers in class? My thinking about that is that if a student is just simply bored by my lecture and she decides that she would rather play solitaire or search the internet or check her email, whatever it might be, it's better for that person to do that than to be talking to someone else in my class. That's the one thing that really irritates me and frankly irritates a lot of other students is when you have people that are just carrying on a lot of side conversations. And if they simply don't feel that they need to listen to me and can do something more productive, and as long as they're not bothering other people or me, then that's okay. I also use Blackboard now to share current articles, answer frequently asked questions, deal with some of the administrative aspects of the class and so forth and so on. I don't use any of the testing features of the computer for my on-campus class, in part because not everybody brings their computer to class, and also because I always have a few non-MBA students in my class, forestry students or law students or whatever it might be. I also don't use the computer techniques in my Master's of Accounting classes. This is kind of really a disappointment to me, but we're really a lot less far along in terms of technology in our accounting classes than we are in the MBA classes and some of the other disciplines. There's also a need for a fair amount of administrative help. We do have reasonable resources in our business school, but they're mainly directed to the MBA program, and up until now, at least, it's been harder to get that kind of support for accounting classes or more general classes. All in all, I've been pleased with the results of using technology. Again, I'm never going to become anywhere close to the kind of people that are going to talk later in the program, but in my way, I think it's worked pretty well. And actually, I've been kind of proud of the fact that many of my accounting department colleagues now consider me to be relatively computer geekish. So, I'd be happy to answer a couple of questions if you'd like. Bob?
Just a quick question. I suspect it's a little easier for you since your students are all in the same firm, but how do you control academic integrity on exams?
On the exam?
Online exams. How do you control the honesty of
them? We trust them, basically. And that's a very serious issue. I know I had talked to you a little bit about that when we first got into it. We did have some honesty issues in connection with some case reports that students prepared, and there was an embarrassing duplication of the same information, put it that way, and we think we straightened them out on that. But with respect to the examinations, there really isn't any good way of doing that other than forcing them all to go to a secure location or something of that nature. So
since you're all in the same firm, you could just simply have a colleague or a supervisor sign off on it.
We could.
It'd be a little easier for you. You know, back in England, in the correspondence days, they sent them to the village vicar.
Right.
And the vicar was considered to be the most highest integrity in the village, and so administered the exam. But it would be possible.
We could do that, but we have chosen not to. Yes?
Approximately, how many students do you have in each class?
I'm sorry, that's a good point. About 40. Frankly, we have one large classroom, one classroom that seats just a little over 40 that has all of the computer built in and so forth, although most of them still bring their laptops to.
You're talking about it on campus?
For the PricewaterhouseCoopers people, it's a group each year of about 40. It's a contract that they agree to send us, I don't remember exactly, but somewhere between the low 30s and 40, and they have to pay for the minimum, whether they send them or not. Yes?
Okay, you had mentioned the elements that had small weights in terms of course evaluation, but you didn't indicate where the vast majority of the course evaluation came from in terms of student evaluation.
The evaluations have been, at least for my class, have been very good. I mean, I'd say excellent. In part, I'm not sure if this is the reason, but I try to really treat every new class as a new learning experience, both for them and for me. And I ask for feedback throughout the class. I'll send them surveys regularly and say, was this working? Is that working? Do you have any new ideas? And so forth. And I try to actually make some changes, even though I'm into the fifth year now of this program. And I think that it's working reasonably well. Every semester there'll be something that somebody will suggest that seems like it makes some sense, and I'll change something mid-course just to show that I'm really interested in their feedback. And generally speaking, the feedback has been excellent. The real question, I guess, real concern is that while I said most of these people are information technology types, a lot of them have had an accounting class, and more so than my on-campus MBAs. In the two-year program, you're not supposed to have had a business undergraduate degree. Some of these people for PricewaterhouseCoopers have. And so there'll be, in every class, there'll be one or two CPAs and maybe a couple of chartered accountants. So there'll be three or four or five people that really could take the final exam and not bother with the rest of the class. My philosophy has been you can't worry about those few people. You have to teach the ones that really need it. But to try to keep it real enough so that the ones that have some accounting background still get something out of it. And by and large, those who have had an accounting background say it was a good refresher, or I was able to bring some real world experience to them that was helpful. And I try to encourage them to help the other students and so forth. I was a little bit worried about that some of them would just be completely turned off. It hasn't been too bad about that. Yes?
Is online course on the same schedule as the rest of the university?
No, it's not.
Operates independently.
No, as far as I know, we've been given as much flexibility as we need. I always get requests from the registrar to turn in grades, and I pretty much just say, well, I'm sorry, my class hasn't even started yet, for example. Or I turn them in a long time before they're necessary. We run into some of those issues once in a while, but we're always able to work around them. Typically now we're giving, I'm not sure if it's six or eight classes a year, and they're roughly two-month periods, and they just sort of work according to our schedule.
So they're on campus for 10 days? And then the course is over by the time 2 months?
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's the way it typically works, is that they start with 2 weeks, and they're getting orientation to the whole program at that time, plus they're getting two classes, like my class and the business law class this time. And then they'll go off campus for 10 weeks or something like that, and they'll basically finish up my class, and then they'll come back in and have an economics class and a finance class or something like that. We'll have 1 hour just to kind of wrap things up with them, but they're mainly spending it's usually like a 4 or 5 day period starting their next classes at that time. And this just keeps cycling through the two-year period. Yes?
Is the end product the same?
Yes.
Do they get a degree?
It's an MBA. It's not an executive MBA. I mean, the subject matter is the same. The class time, the number of contact hours, of course, this is subject, I guess, to some difference of opinion, but the combination of the hours that we actually have them on campus and what we think is a reasonable conversion factor for the time that they're off campus is the same number of hours that we expect our on-campus people to have. So it's a full-fledged MBA. As I said, the only real difference between them and the regular people that come to campus, if I can call it that way, is that they have less choice in their second year. They can basically major in marketing or finance, and they get like two or three choices of classes between that. But otherwise, it's a lockstep program. Well, I don't want to take too much time. One more question? Yeah.
Well, I've not taught in an MBA online, but I've taught an undergraduate online program. And my problem here is that I want to encourage group work.
Yes.
And I don't know how to do it aside from allocating points. Did you say that you encourage group work, but how did you do it?
Well, I encourage group work in the sense of insisting that they discuss the problems that they have to work each week together, many cases and things of that nature. I don't grade them on that. It really just has to become a self-policing kind of a thing. I do actually give them one case at the end of the course that they have to turn in, an international accounting case, so that they have to do that in teams. And I do not, for example, ask them to grade each other on the participation. I do that on my on-campus classes, but it just doesn't seem practical to do that. And we do always get some feedback that some teams work great and some others don't, and that, you know, Bob is on a team and Bob has never done anything, doesn't even return the phone calls to his team members. You get a certain amount of that. And one of the nice things that we have with the PricewaterhouseCoopers people, in addition to being highly motivated people, there is a coordinator assigned by the firm. And when we get some feedback if somebody really isn't doing sort of their fair share and so forth, we can apply a little pressure through this person and say, you know, you're not, we're all in this together and so forth. So there might be some academic issue involved in that, but we haven't worried about it too much. That's helped. But other classes have used the teams a lot more, that they'll be all casework and things like that. So we try to have a mixture of different things. Thanks very much. I will look forward to the rest of the summer.
I might make a comment about that. Teams are hard, whether they're on campus or distance ed. I'm here at University of Texas San Antonio. They have a state-of-the-art business building. We're very new. And one of the things they have, one type of classroom they have in there, I've